Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com. Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 160 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live from Minneapolis in a hotel room, so hopefully it sounds okay on my end. And joining me as often, Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Nice to have a couple wins to talk about this week instead of what was a pretty rough opening week to open up the season in Philly.
Yeah, I think I'm going to title this something like "That's More Like It" or something like that, because it was much better this week. Of course, when you and I last talked, they had won a game because we talked. I think it was Tuesday or Monday night after the Ronald Acuna extension and all that fun stuff. They did play better briefly, but yeah, it was a positive week in general. Just for clarity's sake, the Braves have now won 5 of 6 after the opening sweep. They're 5-4 and back-to-back series wins, a sweep over Chicago, which was very interesting. We'll talk about that in a second. And then after losing to Miami on Saturday, it got a little bit dicey today on Sunday when they allowed the game to be tied in the ninth, but a pretty breezy walk-off win considering it was bases loaded, no outs in a tie game. And they were pretty likely to score there, and Dansby came up big. So before we get to all of that and the specifics, I do have to ask you one more time, probably the only time. We'll see. Stuff keeps happening, but the Tiger Woods thing hit another level this week, Scott, and we have to start there because you did a national radio hit based on this.
I did.
And that is hysterical. We'll talk. I'm going to ask you about that in a second, but the Braves official account tweeted an image of Tiger Woods on Thursday, which was hysterical. Braves fam flooded the Cubs Twitter account mentions with like a barrage, then they got into it with the Marlins a little bit over the weekend. The movement sort of hit its apex, and that resulted in you doing, again, a national radio hit. So I have to ask you what's going on with that, because I know we talked about it twice now, but it just keeps getting crazier.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was Friday morning, and I was getting ready for the day. And of course, it's being on the West Coast, it's a little bit earlier out here. But I got an email about 7:30 and from MLB Network Radio, a producer asking if I could come on and talk about it. So it was, I almost thought it was a joke at first. I'm like, no, this seems legit. So yeah, they were great. They reached out and I did a bit. It's on the site if you didn't get a chance to listen to it. It's about 10 minutes on just kind of the oral history of the Tiger Woods photo that's gone wild. So that was cool. I was a little nervous. I'd like to think doing these podcasts every now and then help prepare me for you know, a live radio audience, which was a little unnerving, but it was cool to do and a lot of fun, and glad we kind of share with everyone just, you know, how crazy the movement had gotten.
Yeah, I mean, shouts to Gaurav, who's been on this podcast, and Road to Atlanta, of course, for helping to spread that madness on the road.
Yes, yes, yes.
But yeah, just kind of hilarious. A couple of the people that you and I interact with regularly were talking about how it might be the best thing that Braves Twitter has ever done, and I kind of agree with that. There's a lot
of absolutely, man. It's been so much fun on there.
It's been it's been pretty wild. I know we don't spend it, and we sort of do more of a baseball driven, less side weirdness podcast than some. But I wanted to at least point that out because that was pretty hilarious slash interesting. And when Chris Willis, our fearless leader at Talking Chop, let me know that they had asked you to do their radio hit, and then you texted me before it started, I was very excited. And then it happened, and you killed it. And again, yeah, check it out on the site. Scott posted it, so it's now readily available. And by the way, the co-host on MLB Network Radio was pretty funny as well. I had no idea who was going to be hosting when you were on, and I did a spit take when I heard who it was.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was talking to Josh on Twitter, who he was the one who infamously, when Jim Bowden, for those who don't know, Jim Bowden a couple of years ago got duped on a fake account and kind of report on a trade deadline move of some sorts, if I remember right. And he kind of stole some information that was fake information and then like changed his Twitter account and tried to act like he was hacked and changed his name to Ralph.
Oh, man. It was
so
wild.
I didn't realize quite who was on there until like the interview started, and the whole time I'm just trying to keep it together and not ask. And obviously, you know, in that situation, I wouldn't, but no. it was certainly running through my head to ask, to at least, you know, to bring it up. But yeah, it was once I heard who was on the call, I was laughing a little bit.
Yeah. You made the right choice, and not firing off a question about Ralph, but I did really enjoy that. And I didn't know until I heard it. So that was, very, very funny. Okay, we could talk some baseball now. Big picture wise, the Braves are obviously in better shape now. They're 5-4. They're within a game and a half now of the Phillies. So the barrage from the opening series has subsided. So let's run down a little bit of what happened here. This last time we talked on Tuesday. Wednesday was a fun one. There was the bases clearing double by Johan Camargo, who was making his most prominent, I guess, not debut, but most prominent appearance of the season on Wednesday with a pretty well-constructed lineup. That was the first time that the Braves had faced a lefty this season, and we were all kind of pleasantly surprised with what happened. So, I mean, I don't have too many thoughts on that game other than I was impressed by the lineup, and that was, of course, the biggest play was the Camargo basis clearing double.
Yeah, I mean, that game really kind of had the feel of a 2018 game, just the way that they battled, and then the Cubs took the lead middle innings, and of course last year the Braves led baseball in wins in their last at bat, and I don't know if that game technically counted towards that number, but you know, for Camargo to come on and clear the bases, it was good to get that win, as you said, sweep the Cubs. It was kind of fortunate to get anytime you can get teams early in the year before they kind of hit their stride. You know, I'd rather play the Cubs right now the way they've been struggling versus getting them in August or something like that when they've probably had a little time to figure things out and make some moves. So, you know, to sweep the Cubs and start out with a pretty easy win that first day and then to come back on Wednesday night was a nice addition and way to keep the mojo going after getting that first win on Monday.
For sure. And then Thursday was the Max Fried experience. He, you know, the perfect game bid. He was never going to get there based on what the Braves were going to probably be doing with his pitch count and all that fun stuff. But six innings, one hit, no walks, no runs, five strikeouts, 11 ground ball outs, which was really impressive. Max Fried, we've been very, very pro Max Fried on this podcast, but he was absolutely filthy on Thursday, which made for another pretty breezy evening. Ended up being 9-4 after the bullpen got a hold of it a little bit, but not really in doubt at any point. And Fried, I think, kind of announced his presence with authority with regard to the rotation, because, and I tweeted this famously on that night, but a lot changed from the opener when he was in mop-up duty behind, like he was the guy that they used in the lowest leverage spot in a blowout loss on opening night, and then suddenly he was dealing at like a ridiculous level on Thursday.
Yeah, that's as good as I've seen a young pitcher throw for the Braves in a long time. I mean, he was filthy. Everything was right on the corners. The curveball was working. He was changing location well. Everything that you want a good young pitcher to do, he was doing. So, yeah, he pitched like a guy who didn't want to go back to the bullpen or go down to Gwinnett again. And I think that certainly bought him at least one more start. He's going to start, I think it's Tuesday night against the Rockies. Here in a couple days, he'll be the starter. And then I would assume that if, you know, until he shows that he can't, because again, it's always been about injuries for him. I think now in his career, he's made 10 starts and he has a sub-3 ERA in those starts. So he clearly has the stuff and the makeup to be a good pitcher. It's just a matter about staying healthy. And he also talked about, which I found was interesting, that his time in the bullpen last year actually kind of opened his eyes a little bit, and he kind of learned about how to attack hitters, and you don't have to strike everyone out, and you need to get ahead of them, and if you can strike them out, great, but ultimately you just want to set them down without running up your pitch count too much. So it was all a really encouraging first start for him, and hopefully he's able to keep going. And even with a couple guys, you know, Kevin Gausman, who we'll talk about, Kevin Gausman comes back, and Mike Foltynewicz is nearing a return. But you would think that Fried did enough to at least keep his name in the running to get starts moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, worth mentioning again, to your point there, the 11 ground ball outs is, not more impressive than the overall number, but the fact that he was just dealing and keeping the pitch count low and just in full control was pretty impressive. I mean, he's still young, like he's 25, which isn't like super duper young, but still very, very young and intriguing. Obviously a great arm for him. We'll talk about the rotation big picture in a second. I do want to get to Gausman, who came up, was recalled, called up or whatever it was after his rehab start. His first start of the season was Friday, and he was equally dominant. 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, 88 pitches for Gausman. They actually optioned Shane Carl to Gwinnett to make room for Gausman, which is worth noting as well. But it would be hard to chronicle 2 more effective starts back-to-back than what Fried and Gausman did, combining, 13 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 2 walks. That's pretty lights out. Obviously, you can't expect that all the time, but I'm a fan of Kevin Gausman, and he was obviously very good last year. You had to be a little bit worried about him with the injury stuff, but he obviously did not appear to be hampered in any way when he came back.
No, I mean, he pitched about as well as you could have realistically hoped or expected. Velocity was good. His splitter came on after he had a little bit of time to throw it. So, yeah, I mean, it was encouraging, especially when you consider how poorly he threw in the spring. I mean, I think he made 2 starts where he didn't even get out of the second inning. That's why you don't evaluate spring starts too much, but they are an indication of how guys are feeling, how they're throwing. And it wasn't just the results, but his stuff just didn't look great. So, the fact that his velocity was up to the mid 90s, I think he touched 96 or 97 at one point, which is really good. His velocity was down last year, though it sounds like that was a product of some shoulder inflammation, which he was kind of pitching through. So, he's always been a guy who's performed when he was in Baltimore, and obviously he was pretty good in the second half last year. If he's able to continue that and be a stabilizing presence in the middle, especially as they rotate all these young pitchers in, I think it's only going to help the Braves and give them a shot to compete all year long.
Yeah, they need him. I mean, he's one of the safer guys when he's healthy, and now that he seems to be, that's pretty intriguing. Obviously, he will not be as good as he was in his first start on a regular basis, but I do like him as sort of a stabilizing influence in the middle of that rotation. Moving on from there, Kyle Wright was pretty good on Saturday. Of course, the Braves lose that game as the one loss they had because A.J. Minter got beaten up a little bit. He had just come off of his injury and being activated. I guess Thursday he pitched a little bit better, of course. Minter, I'm talking about now, he walked 2 on Thursday and did not give up any more damage than that. But on Saturday, gave up a single and then a home run immediately in his first 2 batters to basically lose the game. It was tied, so it wasn't like he completely imploded, but that was sort of the black mark. But before that, Wright was pretty good as well. So it wasn't like, obviously he wasn't quite as good as Gausman and Fried were, but Wright didn't give his spot up either because he was very solid. And in general, he's not been amazing to this point, but we all know how talented Kyle Wright is. There was a reason why he was a top draft pick and all that. So he isn't going away either.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that first start on Sunday night when it was like 40 degrees in Philadelphia and facing just what's proving to be maybe the best lineup in the National League. I mean, there was a lot of things working against him in that opening start. So, yeah, he seemed to be more comfortable, more confident. He was peppering the zone. He was throwing strikes. And like you said, it was just those 2 solo homers that got him in the 5th inning. That was all the damage the Marlins would do against him. But he looked good. I mean, he had just 1 walk, which was important. He didn't have great command against the Phillies, but just 1 walk, 5 hits, the 2 runs, 4 strikeouts. It was more to kind of what we expected out of him. It's interesting. I'm not sure what they're going to do with him. I think if the Braves have to shift somebody down to the minors when Folty comes back, I think Wright is more likely just because he's younger than someone like Max Fried. He also has some service time things to consider where the Braves might decide to send him down in the minors to get another year of control. But ultimately, as we've said a couple times now, the Braves are going to regularly rotate all their young pitchers. not just Wright and Fried, but Tukey and Bryce Wilson and Mike Soroka, who had a fantastic start on Saturday night. I think he threw five or six scoreless innings. I think he had one, gave up one hit, no walks, and struck out six. It was kind of what he did all of last year before getting a call up, just dominating the minor leagues. So you talk about getting Fulte back and Soroka, there's going to be a logjam, and I think that's when the shuttle between Atlanta and Gwinnett, if you will really come in play.
Yeah, I mean, we'll put the game-by-game on hold for a second. Just talk about the rotation for a minute. I mean, we talked about those three guys in succession. Fulte's on his way back. Fulte had a rehab start in Gwinnett on Thursday and pitched well. It was electric by everybody that watched him. I did not watch that, but five innings, 56 pitches. He was apparently really good, and not surprising fashion. He is very good when he's right. So you have those, all that to say, and then Sean Newcomb pitched earlier today on Sunday, was not good early in the start, but then battled through it and emerged with a pretty solid overall performance, at least with what the stats look like. And then you have Julio, so you have all these arms, and I hesitate to kind of put any firm proclamations in place. I think the only two guys who are super safe to stay in rotation when healthy are Fulte and Gausman. Everybody else is, you know, you can kind of have preferences or what you think is going to happen. We got a lot of questions. Probably early in the game on Sunday, I have to go back and look at the timestamps of when these came in. With people asking about Newcomb going to the bullpen and being optioned to Gwinnett and all this stuff, it's like it's clearly somewhat of an overreaction. And I know he drives people crazy. He drives me crazy too sometimes when he can't throw strikes. But you have all these guys. If we just put Fulte and Gausman in their different category, then you have Julio is like this very different entity who was this low ceiling but safe veteran who's making a lot of money. Everybody else is almost in the same pool. I guess Newcomb's ahead of them just for safety's sake because he's been around for so long. But you have all these arms, and to your point, it's not going to be a five man rotation. It's going to be, not that they're ever going to just like run out seven, but it's going to feel like that at times when they're just kind of rolling through these guys. You know, Bryce Wilson already went down, but he'll be back up at some point. Tukey's going to be up. It's just going to be weird. Not in a bad way. I kind of support it, honestly, in a big picture sense. But for a traditional Braves fan looking for their five starters, it just may not be that way this season for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just the Braves who are employing this. Now, teams are certainly envious of all the young pitching depth. But even if you don't have the pitching depth that the Braves have, teams are still working on finding ways to not have their starters throw 200 innings. I think the stat was only 13 guys threw 200 innings last season or something like that. I mean, it's just a different game. It's not the same. You know, pitchers are handled so much differently now than they were 15, 20 years ago. So, it's you know, it's a good problem to have. Frankly, you can never have too many pitchers. As you said, I think Fulte and Gausman, if healthy, are basically locked in. And Julio, I think they've shown that even with his ups and downs, just because I think they value that veteran consistency and they know he could throw 100 pitches or so if you need him. I don't think he's a lock by any means, but if he's been a little bit better than at least through two starts than what he was last year. He's done a nice job missing bats and all that. So, I think that ultimately you have a couple guys who you're going to leave in there. And then other than that, it's going to be a competition. And if you have two or three bad starts in a row, I think the Braves are going to make a decision to say, you know, let's give someone else a try, especially if they're throwing well, whether it be in Gwinnett or if it's out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be a revolving door, and that's not a bad thing. We'll see how Julio fares too. Like, he pitches Monday in Colorado. We'll talk about that series at the end of the podcast. But two starts so far, and while it hasn't always looked pretty, Tehran has been fine. You know, 3.6 ERA in two starts. Again, has not looked great at all times. You know, he's allowed 15 base runners in 10 innings. But you know, if he keeps doing that, it isn't going to matter how it happens. Like, at the end of the day, they're not going to take Julio out of the rotation unless he just kind of implodes, and he's not done that. So that's one more guy that, you know, you kind of need him to fall away. If you're rooting for the young guys, more often than not, it kind of requires Julio to cool off. And if you're a Braves fan wanting wins, you don't want to root for that. So it's like this weird dichotomy where no one is excited to watch Julio Tehran pitch, but as long as he's okay, he's going to be there every fifth day. That's kind of locked that into.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of whenever he survived the offseason, you had a feeling that that was going to be the case. I mean, as long as the wheels don't completely fall off. Now, we say this, and if he gets torched over his next three or four starts, they might look to make a change. But you can do worse if he's your, you know, if he's the guy he's been early on this season, if he's your fifth starter, you can do a lot worse. I think you know what you're getting with Julio. He's not really going to surprise you necessarily. And as we said, the results early on have been encouraging. And if he's able to repeat that, you know, for 25 starts or so this year, I'm sure the Braves would happily take it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's something we've always been saying, is that even if you kind of assign everything that we've said to Julio, there are many, many teams where he would help them as a fifth starter. It's not exciting. It's not a ton of upside. But, the Braves could certainly do worse. That's kind of the way that we'll put that for now. Okay, that's enough of that, I think, for this moment, because there's a lot of fluidity happening. I want to talk about Sunday real quick, and that requires you to discuss Dansby Swanson, who had the walk-off. We mentioned this a little bit earlier, where it wasn't like he had this huge pressure spot. It was basically no outs, but he delivered. And for the season so far, it's a pretty small sample, but .346, .471 on base, .731 slugging for Dansby Swanson. That is the crazy number, is the .731 slugging. It's a very small sample, but he's showing power. His mechanics are different, and everyone seems to be on the same page that he just looks like a different guy at the plate, if any part of this is real. And, you know, obviously a 1,200 OPS is not real, I don't think. But if any of this is real, he's now an average hitter or better, then look out, because he is obviously very good at everything else.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, with his glove, he's so good defensively now. He seems, and with this new batting stance that he has, we discussed, he's kind of changed things. He's dropped his hands a little bit. He's changed his foot placement. I mean, he looks like a completely different hitter. I was talking to a friend who's a Diamondbacks fan who follows the Diamondbacks pretty closely, and of course followed him. Followed Dansby, and he said that he was watching the game today or saw the home run today and said it looks like a completely different player. So it's obvious that the adjustments he's made. You talked about the power. That's something that he's lacked early on, and everyone kind of thought he would be a guy who hits 15 to 20 homers this year or every year. And while he certainly inched towards that last year, he's hit three homers now in eight games, nine games. And not only that, but while of course they're exhibition games, but in those two exhibitions against the Reds, he homered both nights and went opposite field. So, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. He's getting the ball in the air. He's doing a nice job on the outside part of the plate as well. That's where pitchers last year were throwing breaking stuff on the outer part of the plate, and he was just kind of flailing at it and not hitting it with any kind of authority. He seems to be laying off those pitches and taking advantage of whenever he does get pitches in the zone. So I think through the first week and a half or so, he's been the brightest point of anyone for the Braves. And even if he's an average hitter, you know, even if you can get a 750 or so OPS out of Dansby with his glove, he's going to be a very valuable piece. And you hope that with his pedigree and history, the sky could be the limit for him. And he obviously has the upside to be a 5 or 6 WAR player if he's able to keep this going, and that would be, goes without saying, that would be very good for the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, his slugging is again pretty comically inflated at this point. It's 34 plate appearances, but you know he has 3 home runs and 34 plate appearances. He had 6 in his entire rookie season, 551 plate appearances. So just kind of to show you how the power is coming on. We'll see if that lasts, but very, very positive signs for Dansby Swanson. Again, you can't ask for much more than this. We transitioned a little bit. I mean, we talked about Johan Camargo earlier briefly when he had the bases clearing double on Wednesday. People were starting to chirp a little bit over the first weekend, I should say, that he was not playing and they were worried about his plate appearances. But quietly this week, he made 3 starts. He started right field on Sunday. He started at third on Saturday when they were giving Josh Donaldson the day off. You know, they're using him the way that I would have used him the entire time. His bat actually hasn't been super alive other than the big double on Wednesday, but I think people don't need to worry about him not playing. Like, that was something that we were getting. Like, I had a couple questions like fouled away on Thursday, Friday, and then he played back-to-back days at different spots. And now it's like, okay, everybody calm down. He's going to play. It may not be as much as you want him to play, but you know that this is with no injuries, and him starting in the core outfield spot, especially in right field, is encouraging just with his flexibility and versatility. Because if they're comfortable with him playing out there, it's the Marlins, all that fun stuff, but if they're willing to put him out there, that is a good sign.
Yeah, and Johan looked really comfortable in both the corner spots. I mean, there was a great photo of him today of him blowing a bubble as he was tracking down a ball in the outfield, which was kind of fun to see. So yeah, he looks confident for a guy who's never really played a corner outfield spot. You mentioned playing left on earlier and playing right on Sunday. And the other thing too is, and the Braves did this on Sunday, but you can always switch him out. If it's a close game late, you can always defensive sub him out with Markakis or or whoever, you know, if you want to put Joyce out there and left and move guys around, you have that flexibility. But yeah, as you said, he's not going to play every single day, but I don't think Johan's at a level where you necessarily even want him playing every day. He's going to be more valuable when he can bop all over the place and give guys like Donaldson, give guys like Markakis a little bit of a breather. And we didn't mention it with Dansby, but Dansby avoided what could have been a really bad injury.
I almost forgot about that actually, because he was Wednesday. Fine now, but yeah.
I mean, I was worried that
didn't look good.
And on Wednesday, he went to go tag out John Lester on a tag play and jammed his wrist or his thumb or whatever it was. And of course, he had surgery on that same wrist last September. So you worry that it was going to zap his power and he was going to play through an injury like he did last year. And obviously, he feels pretty good because he's hit the ball really well since then. But yeah, going back to Camargo, he's going to be all over the place. Don't worry too much about the one hit so far. He's going to get into a groove and be the guy who the Braves envisioned whenever they signed Donaldson.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm, you know, people were a little bit, I don't know if it was worried, but it's like, oh, Donaldson's already resting. What's wrong? I'm like, well, that's the whole point. He was never going to play 158 this season. Like, Donaldson is an older guy. He wasn't off to this torrid start. Camargo is obviously very qualified to play third base. But yeah, him playing all over the place is kind of coming into place. He played, did he play a second at shortstop? I can't remember. I think he came in at one point and played shortstop for a second. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's playing everywhere. He can play there, obviously. So the plan is falling in place with Camargo. So nothing to be concerned about whatsoever. And catcher is a worry spot all of a sudden, because over the weekend, Brian McCann was put on the I keep saying DL on the IL, the injury.
IL.
With a right hamstring strain that he clearly suffered in plain view of everyone. Everybody knew as soon as it happened that it was going to be a little bit of an issue for BMAC. He's a veteran. He's an old guy. That happens to old guys. Soft tissue injuries happen when you're a little bit older, and that it's unfortunate because you know, everybody's rooting for Brian McCann in a big way, but he's going to be gone for a little bit here. And then Tyler Flowers got hit in the hand with a pitch, stayed in the game, but apparently couldn't swing a bat, according to the reports. They stayed in the game because he was the only guy available. They, you know, their emergency catcher was Charlie Culberson, who hasn't caught in like 10 years. They said, so, you know, they called up Alex Jackson, who played on Sunday. He's now pretty much the only guy. They're not putting Flowers on the IL. Apparently, he's going to be okay. He's scheduled to have another X-ray on Sunday morning, but he's like day to day. I guess was available in an emergency, but if you can't swing a bat, that's not ideal. And to have both of your veteran catchers go down in what, an hour? It was kind of crazy to see that happen back to back. I know they're both veterans in their 30s, but that's not the greatest luck in the world.
I want to know what it is about Braves catchers getting hurt like instantaneously, because if you think about it, last year was it Flowers and Suzuki who both got hurt within like 24 hours of each other or something like that.
And then there was a mad scramble to be like, who plays catcher now? We don't know.
It was like, I think for a game or two, they had Chris Stewart and like literally no other catcher. If Stewart got hurt, it was going to be an emergency catcher regardless of situation. So,
I mean, that literally almost happened today. I mean, they called Jackson like, because they, you know, if it was easier, they probably could put Flowers on the IL. But I'm not even sure who would it be. If they had to put Flowers on the IL, do you even know who they'd call up? I'm not even sure. Do they have another guy that we even recognize? Maybe I'm drawing a blank here, but I can't even think about who.
I know they is Rafi Lopez. I should know this. I know he's not on the 40-man roster. Did they get rid of him, or did they just reassign him and boot him off the 40-man?
That fell off. That fell through the cracks for me too. So let me. This is great radio. I think he's still in Gwinnett. So maybe he would be the guy.
So you would have to boot someone from the 40-man roster just to get him up. I mean, it would be a bad situation if all of a sudden you're relying on Alex Jackson, who called a good game. I mean, to his credit, he made his debut on Sunday and called a good game with Sean Newcomb, who is probably not the easiest guy in the world to catch with his inconsistent command. So, you know, Jackson, he didn't get a hit. He looked a little overwhelmed at the plate, but I mean, I get it. Your heart's going a million miles an hour. You're not thinking about anything. You're just trying to get the bat on the ball. So, I don't know. Hopefully Flowers, thank goodness there was nothing broken. That could have been really bad. He's a guy who always seems to get hit. You know, maybe they sit him for another day or two as they travel out west. Hopefully whenever he flies The altitude doesn't mess with his bruising and swelling or whatever he may have. But with a little bit of luck, he'll be back in a couple days. And with Mac, you hope, as you said, he's a little bit older. You hope that the hamstring strain is more of the mild variety, and he's able to come back shortly after the 10 days that he's going to be on the IL.
Yep. I mean, all things considered, they certainly would like to have Brian McCann healthy and available. Hopefully that will happen very soon here. But, you know, Jackson, positive signs for the most part. It's one game, so who knows. But people were really excited about Alex Jackson in spring. I gathered that from people that were down there, talking to people that cover the team a little bit, you know, on and offline. People are intrigued by Alex Jackson. He's come a long way in a short period of time. So the fact that he was not an embarrassment in a major league game today, if you told someone like a year and a half ago that Alex Jackson was going to be catching in a major league game in April 2019, they would have thought you were insane. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, good for him. I mean, yeah. They were talking today that, you know, they told Jackson last year when he started in Mississippi, you know, don't worry about hitting. Just work on your footwork, work on your framing, work on your defense, and anything else you can do to hit is, you know, is a bonus. So good for him. Like we said, there was talk last summer, I think it was Mark Bowman, who said that, you know, scouts had really kind of fallen off a little bit on the Jackson bandwagon. Not that he wasn't a guy who had the potential.
They definitely did. Even our guys were like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe not the, you know, he had all the prospect pedigree and was a high draft pick and all that. And even if he's not the star catcher that some people thought he could be, an offensive force behind the plate, even if he's a, you know, backup for a few years, you can do a lot worse. And you know, good on him for working hard and improving his defense and all that.
Yeah, I mean, at his age, you know, the fact that he's already arriving and being okay, like he's still 23. I think he's been around for a long time. He's a first rounder in 2014. It's been a while, but he sort of had this up and down path, but still very young in the grand scheme of things. So if it works out for him, that'd be pretty cool in a lot of ways. This is going to be a shorter podcast than normal because I'm on the road and, you know, it's just one of those things. But I do want to end with a little bit of a future look. The Braves go to Colorado, which we talked about a little bit earlier. Three games in Colorado on the road, and then including a getaway day afternoon game in Colorado on Wednesday, and then back for four against the Mets, the one team in the division, you know, that I haven't spent that much time watching. You know, there was a lot of talk about Philly, of course, in the opening series, and then Philly and Washington were playing with the Bryce Harper stuff. I haven't seen too much of the Mets. I mean, I know what they've been looking like, but that'll be intriguing. It's always fun when the Mets come in town, and that's also an ESPN Sunday nighter this time next week, which will be always fun, especially because the Mets employ Jessica Mendoza, who will be, I guess, commentating on the game despite being an employee of the Mets. So that'll be very interesting as well.
Yeah, that's a weird little setup they have.
All that is. And A-Rod's a Yankees employee, so it's not just her. Like, it's a very, very strange setup for ESPN. But anyway, what are your thoughts, expectations? I know you're always the go-to guy for these. It's not really that late. I guess it's like a 9:40 start Monday night against Colorado. So you're always the guy who gets the call on these because you're out there on the West Coast. But Colorado, and by the way, if it's not you, it's me because I don't sleep. But Colorado, New York, thoughts?
Yeah, it's you know, Rockies are, as we're recording, they're getting thumped by the Dodgers again, and the Rockies are off to a pretty bad start. They're going to be 3-7 going into tomorrow unless they make a huge comeback. So they're off to a little bit of a slow start. Again, you talked about the Cubs just not playing very well. The Rockies are in the same boat, so it doesn't hurt to get them out of the way. It is interesting. We were talking about the weather, and Monday and Tuesday, it's supposed to be beautiful in Denver, like unseasonably warm, like mid-upper 70s, 81 on Tuesday, which would be good. But then there's like this winter snowstorm coming in on Wednesday on getaway day, so hopefully the Braves don't get rain/snowed out because it would be a real pain to have to fly all the way back to Denver for one game later in the year. But, you know, they'll see Kyle Freeland on Monday night, who I believe was the Rockies starter last year in the playoffs. It was their game one wild card starter. They'll see Jermon Marquez, who's really, really good. If you haven't seen him pitch, he just got a big contract extension similar to all the other guys getting their deals extended. And then Wednesday's up in the air. So it should be good series, a lot of offense. Coors Field always makes for some fun games. The Braves have actually played a little bit better there in recent years compared to what they – I mean, it used to be a place where even when the Braves were really good, they seemed to lose at least 2 out of 3 every time they would go there. So hopefully a good series. And then you mentioned the Mets. They're off to a good start. It looks like it's a 4-game series, and they'll see their whole rotation with the exception of Noah Syndergaard, which I guess is a little bit of a break. You wish it was DeGrom, who's been – basically perfect in his couple starts this year. They'll see him, I think, on Sunday Night Baseball, actually.
Yep. That's what's in line for right now, at least.
Yeah, yeah. So, be tough series. I mean, as we talked all spring, that it's going to be so important to play well against divisional foes, and with the East being so competitive this year, it's going to be a four-team race all the way. So it'd be nice to, especially with it being at home, to win at least two, if not take three out of four and take the series.
Yeah, the least favorable pitching matchup of the week is probably Monday with Julio in Coors Field against Kyle Freeland. That's a bad matchup. Freeland is very good, and all respect to Julio, his stuff is not really play in Coors Field, I don't think. So we'll see how that looks, but that's not a favorable one for the Braves. The rest of the time, it's not too bad, though. You know, obviously, I think what I have circled on my little fake agenda here is Kyle Wright, Steven Matz on Thursday, because I am always intrigued by Steven Matz. I don't know why. I can't quit that guy. So
yeah, should be fun.
And then DeGrom, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, right now the Braves have a, I guess, an unplanned starter for that Sunday night game. It would be Max Fried if Folty's not back. It might be Folty. We'll see. But Folty DeGrom would be fun. If Folty gets back, that's like the first night that I think that's like the first night that Folty could be back. In theory, that's the date that I had written down as like maybe Bowman tweeted that out. That was like April 14th, maybe Folty. And I'm like, all right, that'd be interesting. If that happens, that'd be awesome. Folty and DeGrom on ESPN Sunday night. Woo.
How weird is it to have you get two Sunday night games in 3 weeks for the Braves? Where
we
were talking. Yeah, I mean, I think before last Sunday, the last Sunday night game for them was the military game. It was at Fort Bragg where they were playing. And then before that, I mean, God knows. Now, with reason, I mean, obviously they usually don't put rebuilding, you know, teams that lose 90 games on Sunday night very often, but kind of fun and kind of weird to have two out of three Sunday night games to begin the year after not being featured on it for basically 3 years in a row.
Yeah, they have a lot of ESPN games this year. These two, well, they have the one, this one with New York, then the following Sunday they're on again. In Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
So it's three out of four. And that's going to be interesting. Unless I'm reading this wrong, and I'm not. It's the following Sunday, the 21st, is Braves at Indians in Cleveland. And that's an ESPN game as well. And then it cools off from there. And they don't play again on Sunday night until late May against St. Louis. But still, this kind of flurry of national attention, it comes with the Braves being good last year. That's probably the biggest reason why this happened. And also, as we discussed ad nauseum on this podcast before, and people know this, the Braves fan base is absolutely enormous. So if they're good, people want to put them on television because they'll get a lot of ratings. The Braves aren't quite the Yankees or the Red Sox, but they have a big fan base that will draw nationally.
So. Well, and nationally too. You know, it's not just one. It's not a centralized fan base like some teams. I mean, it's everywhere.
Like yourself, Scott. Not in the region. We have people from our staff that are not obviously, in addition to you, they're not just like centralized in Atlanta. I know a lot. I have personal friends that have never lived in Atlanta and have been Braves fans for the duration. So it is what it is, man. Thanks to TBS. Shouts to TBS.
We are everywhere. Yeah. Shouts to TBS. The good old days.
And by the way, as someone who covers the Atlanta Hawks, who are very, very centralized to Atlanta, granted, it's a different sport. The fan base size of those two teams is not anywhere close. So, again, shouts to Ted Turner. All right, Scott. Well, that's plenty on this podcast, I think, for now. It'll be a little bit shorter than normal, but we're in the weekly groove now. We can't go an hour and 10 minutes every podcast. We'll probably wear ourselves out in April. But please plug anything that you have going on. I know it's the Scott Coleman Showcase, given the Tiger Woods thing, and now that they're in Colorado, two nights of Scott, I think, Monday and Tuesday, which is always fun. But anything else going on for you that we should be notable?
That is more than anyone could ever ask for. not too much. We'll get like you said, the game day coverage as always, and any kind of news that pops up. Hopefully we get some good news here on the injury front with the guys. And as always, check the site. And I love for anyone who doesn't read them, the minor league recaps are like the best thing you'll read.
Gold.
Yeah. I mean, it's a way to stay in touch with everything going on, but you know, the prospect guys do such a great job, and it's by far and away, you know, one of my favorite parts of the site. So check those out. And as always on social media, Scott Coleman 55.
Yeah. Shouts to Eric and the minor league crew. Those guys do fantastic work. And by the way, a good point of reference here. We also have the Road to Atlanta podcast on this same feed. So if you've not caught that up yet, if you're seeing some weird podcast that you're unfamiliar with on this feed, it's because Road to Atlanta is on this feed now, and you should be listening to that as well. It's the minor league side. I listen to that because I'm always candid in saying that I am not the biggest prospect guy in the world. So I rely on our guys and reading a lot. And you know, our good friend and former co-host Carlos Collazo is over Baseball America. I rely on people that I trust on the minor league stuff because I can't watch as much as I would like to. So Eric and the crew, the minor league recaps are invaluable. So if you're like me and you don't want to dive in and you can't be watching Mississippi on a Tuesday night, that's a great place to catch up on all of that. So check that out on this feed and also on the site at talkingchop.com. So follow Scott. You can follow me if you'd like to come listen to Atlanta Hawks stuff most of the time, at least until the season ends, which is very, very soon. There'll be a lot more Braves focused for about 3-4 months, and then we're back in the Hawks again. But anyway, follow me at BT Roll and follow the site as always. And thank you, Scott. We'll do it again very soon.
Thanks as always for having me on. A lot of fun. And yeah, it's good to have baseball back.
We are back. We're cooking. We're 2 weeks in, and we're having fun. So please subscribe to the podcast, and we'll see everybody next week.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.